Enviru is an award-winning recycling company committed to recycling plastic in a way that encompasses every strand of the circular economy. By merging social impact with technology innovation, we can create a better environment, both for today and for future generations. This podcast aims to make sense of recycling. I'm Becca Smith, and in this episode, I sit down with Libby Checketts, a master's researcher for Enviru at Lancaster University, who has begun research into recycling behaviours and deposit return schemes. She's joined by Johnny Hewlett, CEO of Wear Sustainable Clothing Care Limited. Libby, it's lovely to have you here. I just wanted to kick off this podcast by you explaining a bit about the research you're going to be doing for Enviru.
Of course, yeah, and it's great to be here. So I'm basically looking into what psychological marketing interventions we can use to increase consumer recycling habits in public spaces, basically asking what we can do to get people to recycle more when they're out and about. So one thing that researchers have found in the past is that people are much more likely to recycle when they're at home than when they're out and about. So they're much more comfortable separating waste at home and putting it in the little green recycling boxes than they are finding recycling bins outside when they're out in public. And we're basically asking how to change that. Obviously, Enviru is opening a PET recycling centre in the Northwest in the next year, I think. And they're hoping to be gathering as much plastic recycling as they can from the Northwest. So they're hopefully going to provide a vending machine or a reverse vending machine for us to use on Lancaster University's campus. And then once we have that, we're going to experiment with a few different incentives, such as deposit returns, and then different marketing techniques to see how best we can drive engagement.
Johnny, can you just tell me a bit about your background and how you've got into sustainability and how you're now working with the Sustainable Laundry Disruptor Wear?
Sure. I mean, my background is really sales and marketing. So I spent the early part of my career working for a big FMCG company called Procter & Gamble. I then switched lanes and went into fashion for a decade and worked on brands such as Marc Jacobs and Diesel. And then a couple of years ago, I was approached by an outfit or an agency called Pilot Light Ventures, who were getting into sustainable technology and innovation. And when I say getting into it, what they do is they go around large companies that have got dormant technologies. That's stuff that they've discovered, they've researched, they've kind of, you know, they've created, but at this point in the company's kind of strategy, they're not going to do anything with. So we take those great ideas, turn them into products, because they are nothing more than ideas in some cases. So they, you know, a lot of work needs to be done to bring them to, you know, reality, as it were. And then we launch them. And sort of two examples of this is the Wear, which I'm leading, which is a garment cleaner or a fabric cleaner, essentially. So instead of washing your clothes in a washing machine every time, you know, you wear them, the idea is that you can refresh your clothes between washes, because clothes don't always need to go into the washing machine. That's the myth, is that we all, you know, round about, you know, there was a survey done a few years ago that round about up to 90% of the clothes that go into a washing machine aren't actually dirty enough to warrant the intensive cycle that a washing machine sort of carries out. So a bit like a dustbuster and a vacuum cleaner, we want to be the dustbuster to the washing machine. And that's where Wear, as I said, sort of comes in. So that's one of the technologies that Pilot Light has kind of taken and then turned into a reality.
It's really interesting. So, you know, obviously today we're talking about PET plastic recycling, but also fashion. How sustainable, you know, is fashion now? And Johnny, how do you think behaviours are going to have to change in order for consumers to embrace products like Wear?
I mean, it's a great question. Fashion, I think, you know, I was in fashion from 2008 until 2018, and there's been more change with regards to attitudes and you know, motivation and messaging and really kind of wanting to change for the better in a sustainable way in fashion. There's been more change in the last year than I saw in 10 years of actually being in the industry, which can only kind of indicate a good thing. Fashion is like every consumer sort of industry, fashion has to be a mirror of the people that it's serving. Someone used to ask me, you know, what do you create fashion and then give it to the people, or do people tell you what they want and then you go away and create it? And of course, it's symbiotic. It's fashion is a two-way street. And if the consumer is starting to say, well, wait a minute, where's my top from and how was it made? And what was the, you know, what was the wastage that went into, you know, bringing that to me? And you know, when people start asking questions like that, then brands that are, you know, in touch with their consumer and ultimately will be, you know, long-term, will have some longevity, will listen to that and respond accordingly. And so this is what we're seeing in fashion now. We're seeing a movement from the consumer to say, enough's enough, we've got to do better here. And of course, that immediately gets picked up and amplified and responded to by the brands that are serving those consumers.
So really, fashion could learn a lot from plastic recycling, I suppose, which has been around for decades. You know, we've all sort of understand that we can recycle our plastic bottles, but I suppose consumers are now learning to understand that they can recycle their clothes.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of myth in, you know, as ever in, you know, these sorts of things. Putting your clothes into a clothing bank doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be recycled. You know, that's the first thing that people have to understand. It's much, much better to delay and find or find other, you know, more, if you like, kind of directed ways of disposing of your old clothes than simply putting them into a clothing bank. I'm not, you know, putting them into a clothing bank as opposed to throwing them in the trash is, of course, is one step up. But the whole movement of vintage clothing, upcycling, restoration companies now that, you know, you can send your shoes and your bags that otherwise you would have thought these are, you know, these have had it. And, you know, you put them into these services and they come back brand new. And it's like, wow, we go again. Those are the things that are really going to make the difference in terms of recycling fashion. Not simply, well, you know, I put my bottles in the bottle bank and put my clothes in the clothing bank and I've done my bit. It's going to be so much, it needs to be so much more than that. And that's what people are now thankfully waking up to actually kind of thinking and acting on. And of course, it referenced my previous comment, there are blossoming industries and companies that are there to respond to that need and, you know, help the consumer do the right thing.
Libby, in your research for Envari, what social, psychological and insights are you going to be focusing on?
So the biggest set I'm focusing on is norms and social norms. These are how we understand the different contextual and interpersonal influences that can change people's behaviour. So things like peer pressure is actually extremely important when it comes to social change. We want to feel like we belong in a society and we want to feel like we're behaving in a normal or expected way. So there's two types of norms. There's a prescriptive norm, which is how we think others should behave. And there's a descriptive norm, which is how we think other people do behave. So both of these are really important and they're both things we're trying to harness in our research. And descriptive norms, they really help us to like set up different behaviours. So a way to encourage people to start using a reverse vending machine or to start using a recycling bin in public would be to try and set a descriptive norm of other people around you are doing this, therefore you should do it. And then we have prescriptive norms, which create this sense of like moral identity or this consequence of, if I don't do this, I am not as good a person as I would be if I did this. So they're really important for making sure that this change is long lasting and is really impactful. We're also looking at theories of social identity. So that is how we act as a collective rather than an individual. So if we believe we belong to a group that does something, we are more likely to then do that thing. So it's really important, especially when it comes to climate change. Everything climate change and psychology related comes back to social identity and this like collective action. So we're trying to play into some of that as well. It's really important for making sure that changes aren't just going to last as long as something is new or interesting, or as long as there is a exact reward for something. But when we create these like norms and identities, that can drive long-lasting change. That can actually change the way we think about society and change the way that we act as a group. And that will last far beyond any like material gain or novelty of a new initiative.
Absolutely. Johnny, so in the fashion industry, you know, social identity, peer pressure, that's all going to be really important if you're going to be wanting to persuade the consumer to be more sustainable with their fashion.
Completely. And, you know, I'm just picking up on what Libby says, which resonates. The fashion industry could be a poster boy for this kind of, you know, cycle or this kind of evolution. Let's sort of go back 10, 15 years. The social norms and the expected, you know, you belonged if you were never seen in the same thing twice. We live in an Instagram world. Look at my new dress. Look where I am. You know, look at the party I'm at and look what I'm wearing. That created a whole kind of, you know, a whole sea change in attitudes towards fashion, which is very much see it, buy it, then replace it. And fast fashion, you know, and we all know the brands that sit at the top of that tree, capitalized on that and created a chain of you know, a speed of a cadence of cycle that just got quicker and quicker and quicker. So we now own three times as many clothes as we did 20 years ago, and we're keeping them for half as long. And that's the average. So you can just imagine what's happening at the quick end of that, right? Now we've got to bring that to a stop. That's not sustainable. The fashion industry is the second biggest carbon footprint industry in the world after agriculture. It's worse than construction. It's worse than aviation. It's worse than transportation. It is only second to agriculture. So that has to change. And of course, it's the social norms that need to be brought in to be, wait a minute, you know, I don't actually want to be not seen in the same thing twice. I want to do the opposite, because I want to be showing that actually I care about the planet. I care about, you know, what I'm what message I'm sending. And, you know, as soon as that begins to turn, then we're going to see a very, very different fashion industry. And, you know, once again, the consumers will have dictated that. And, you know, I always think about, you know, when it comes to the sustainability challenges and how we get out of this, you know, this death spiral, as it were, it's always a triumvirate of, you know, big companies, ultimately governments and legislation, and then the consumer. And everybody tends to look at each other and say, well, I can't do anything. It's down to them. And, you know, but ultimately the cycle can only move if all three are in the game. And you take plastic bags, for example. Legislation was brought in to put a tax on plastic bags in supermarkets. The supermarkets responded by obviously affecting that tax, but then offering incentives and alternatives of a bag for life and, you know, money off your shopping or whatever it was. Back to Libby's point about it almost has to start with a reward. But then once that habit's in place, you can take that reward away. And what happened? The consumer responded overnight by saying, well, I'm not going to pay 20p for a plastic bag. I'm going to buy a bag for life. And all of a sudden it changed. But it took the three. It took this triumvirate of effort working together towards the same goal at the same time. And that's what needs to happen, you know, through every other habit that we now need to adopt.
In terms of the fashion industry, what policy, if any, would you like government to implement and look at in order to try and make that change?
I mean, I think wastage and taxing wastage is a good start. What we don't know behind the scenes is how much, you know, how many clothes are thrown away, how much, you know, wastage goes into the production and the, you know, the overall sort of cycle of getting clothes from raw material to the consumer. And that, you know, that has to, we're already seeing that with, you know, Green Dot and WEEE, et cetera. But I think that has to become much, much more stringent, because if you became more efficient in how we made clothes and got them to the consumer and thought about, you know, what retailers threw away or disposed of or whatever, then I think, you know, you'd already see a massive difference. That would be a good start.
Could we see in the future, Libby, I don't know, could we see reverse vending machines for clothes? So, you know, you want to get rid of a pair of shoes and then you could incentivize people by giving them, you know, 10p or some sort of reward.
Absolutely. But one of the really important things of recycling is having a whole process. So we know that recycling only starts with the consumer. We then have to have all the processes in place to correctly recycle plastics, cardboard, glass, and then bring it back into our own economy. So to create this closed loop, essentially, circular economy. So recycling things like clothes and shoes, that works when we have a process, when we know what's going to be happening to these clothes and shoes, and when we have really effective ways to either turn them into a different product or to recycle them back into the fashion industry. So once we have that in place through, like Johnny was saying, through legislation and through big companies, then we can bring consumers in and give them a role in recycling clothes. But yeah, hopefully in the future we will have that.
Yeah, and Enviro is really trying to transform the way we recycle plastic and when we're on the go. So I suppose, Johnny, what product are you sort of working on at the moment? Obviously, you've got wear, but is there anything in the future that you could tell us about that might completely transform the way we look at fashion and how we wear fashion?
I think as an industry as a whole, where I believe the opportunities are going to come in fashion around really promoting and ingraining a sustainable sort of approach and attitude is really when big fashion brands start to embrace the whole idea of how their clothes are recycled. So what Libby's just said, creating a closed loop, if you're a fashion brand that really cares about the environment and really wants to live sustainability as opposed to, you know, greenwash or whatever you call it, then you need to have in your plan and your business model not just how you sell the clothes to the consumer in the first place, but then how do you help the consumer make their clothes or their garment or their accessory last as long as possible, and then what is the receptacle at the end of life that ensures that, you know, that garment or that bag or that pair of shoes actually continues to live on in another form, and that brand has taken an active role in ensuring that's where I think the real opportunity lies for the future, and companies that can either help brands do that or companies that can, you know, become an accessory to that, I think will do very well.
How optimistic are you, Johnny, about fashion and sustainability?
Well, I am optimistic, and the reason why I'm optimistic is this. It's a generational thing. When I was growing up, I saw fashion as a huge accumulation exercise. You know, it was about, again, you know, having more and more and having different wardrobes for different seasons and that whole kind of, you know, always having something new to put on, or, you know, some sort of combination that you haven't used before and the rest of it. That was the zeitgeist. That was the mindset. If I talk to my son now, who's 20 years old and, you know, obviously in a cohort of like-minded, you know, individuals, et cetera, and get from him what his attitude towards fashion is. And I know he's not alone. This is back to the social norms and back to wanting to be just like everybody else. You know, that idea of just buying loads of stuff is really abhorrent. It's not where they are. The vintage clothing is getting really big. Having less, but really, you know, the right pieces, promoting the very fact that he's wearing something that isn't necessarily new and has been bought secondhand. I mean, that was a complete anathema to my generation. The idea that you go into a charity shop and buy something that someone else had worn, I mean, that's absolutely wasn't where we were at all, whereas it's almost been turned on its head now. And I think that will, you know, that will only continue, and that consumer will become more and more demanding. And then reference my previous comment about the fact that, you know, fashion brands will react and amplify what the consumers are telling them, in the same way as consumers will look to the brands to tell them what they want and tell them what they should be wearing. And so I think, you know, that consumer that's coming through is going to make the pressure on the fashion industry unrelenting, and that will cause the change.
That's really good to hear. Libby, are you going to be looking at different demographics and seeing how different generations sort of view recycling and how they'd be most incentivized?
A little bit, yeah. previous demographic studies actually show that young people are slightly less likely to recycle than other age groups. Obviously, we're running this scheme on a university campus, so it's predominantly young people who are going to be engaging with my research. So those are the people whose behaviour in terms of recycling in public does need to be shifted. And that's not to say young people are less sustainable or less sustainably minded, but when it comes to recycling, engagement figures just are slightly lower for them. So I'm also going to be trying to look at slightly why that might be. And, you know, it might be a case of young people are more likely to reduce and reuse rather than, you know, and limiting plastic waste right at the source.
Well, it'd be really interesting to see your research, Libby, and hopefully we can speak again in a few months' time and find out exactly how we can make people recycle more. Johnny, thank you so much for your insight into the fashion industry, and I look forward to seeing where and using it and seeing how we can be more sustainable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information and podcasts, go to www.enviru.co.uk.